Maybe some of you know already that even in the meeting with the department, some of the comments that were made to the department were supposed to have been made to who? And because now, and I'm hoping that I'll be finished with Thank you, Madam Chairperson, honorable members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Aidi Chikani, Chairperson of LHBRC. I am accompanied by my colleague, Dr. Malaga, that you know very well, who is our head strategist and responsible for performance of the organization. And instead of being accompanied by the Chief Financial Officer, I'm also accompanied by our young Chartered Accountant, Sondezo, who believes in succession planning, and we thought that it was important to give him the opportunity to participate in this kind of forum. The two colleagues, Dr. Malaga, will talk to our performance and questions that relate to performance. And of course, Sondezo will deal with the regular expenditure and anything that is finance related. May I not waste your time so that you have more than enough time to ask questions, but just sharing with you that since we took over as the council or slash board of NHBRC, we acknowledged the fact that there were a number of challenges for the organization. And as a result, what we decided to do was to put in place a turnaround program, and the focus of this program is to deal with issues of efficacy, issues of competences within the organization, issues of course, fraud, corruption, consequence management, and anything that would enable us to reposition the organization and of course comply fully with the Housing Consumer Protection Measures Act. And hence we have a program, a very detailed program, with both internal capacity and external capacity to be able to deal with it. Hence it will be interesting for us to come back here in the future to deal with what we think has been put in place. Among other things, we acknowledge the fact that within the organization, we did not necessarily have a strong operational strategy, policies, processes, and procedures. As a consequence, we ended up with irregular expenditure and other challenges within the organization. And hence, on that basis, we are not here to share with you that turnaround program. We will be coming to report about the results of that program. For now, I think the focus is to deal with the questions that come out of the AG's findings. Thank you, Chairperson, and I'll ask Dr. Malaga to talk to some of the questions, particularly those that relate to the ATP.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the repeat findings that you see in the annual report were based on the fact that in the 2014-2015 annual report 2014-2015, our annual performance plan was based on turnaround times. So I've projected a slide here so that I can share the information. Okay. The slide in front of you will see that we had three programs for the 2014-2015 financial year: administration and governance, regulation and protection. The chose the second program, regulation, you can see that on usefulness, we had a qualified audit. On reliability, we had disclaimers. On the third program, protection, usefulness, we had a qualified audit. And then on reliability, we had an unqualified audit. This was because our targets were based on turnaround times. For an example, if we say we enroll homes within 3 days, you will find that our target was based on three factors. They must pass the technical test, we check their managerial capability, we check their financial capability. And if one of the factors was not met, they will say they are throwing it out. On that basis, when we went to the next financial year, 2015-2016, we did not use turnaround times. We moved the turnaround times to the level 2 scorecard. But on the level 1 scorecard, we had actual numbers. You can see that there was quite an improvement in that for the same programs, protection and regulation. In terms of usefulness for protection, we got an unqualified audit. In terms of reliability, we got an unqualified audit. For regulation, usefulness, we got an unqualified audit. For reliability, we got a qualified audit because we were still struggling with producing a portfolio of evidence to match it with the information that is from the PDA when we do our inspection. The programs that we've put in action to keep on improving our situation, we are workshopping all our provincial offices in terms of how to load portfolio of evidence. And in our annual performance plan for each key performance area, we have strictly specified the kind of portfolio of evidence that we need. For an example, if it's enrollment, we said we need enrollment certificate. If it's a registration, we need registration certificate. So everything will be clearly aligned to the requirements as they appear in the approved annual performance plan.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable members, maybe a bit of background in as far as our irregular expenditure is concerned. I think this is an area where we have been working closely with the AG over the past 3 years. A bit of background, the reason why a lot of these contracts were declared as irregular is because at the time of award in the 2011-12 financial year, SCM supply chain management principles were not followed. So as a result of that, those contracts were declared as irregular. Now, those contracts were awarded for a number of years. For example, the one that we were awarded for a number of 3 to 4 years. So a lot of those ran out in the last financial year. If I can just check the members, if they do have a copy of our annual report on page 131 of the annual report, note 23 on irregular expenditure, note 23.3. If you look at the numbers have been on a decline. The reason for that is because those contracts were in a process of being phased out. So there were only two instances in the prior financial year. One was cases relating to those legacy contracts which have been concluded. So now some of those contracts have been regularized using the correct SCM prescripts. There were two cases that the AG then picked up as far as employees are concerned. There were two cases where employees did not declare their interest in two companies that we used in one of the remedial claims work that we do on the warranty fund. So those cases were identified. Disciplinary processes are underway against those two employees. There were three contracts that came to an end at the end of September 2016. From October going forward, we will not be having any new instances of irregular expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
artisans, people with disabilities, and women. And we've clearly indicated in the slide, in terms of youth, the number of males that were trained for 2015-2016, the number of females that were trained for 2015-2016. For youth, males were trained 561 and females 1,062. In total for youth is 1,623. In terms of military veterans, the males were trained 75, females 36. In total is 111. For artisans, males 75, females 181. In total for artisans, 256. People with disabilities, males 17, females 17, in total 34. Women, we just said 279. For all the combined programs, for government programs, we said males 728, females 1575, and in total is 2303. So that is what was done for 2016.
Thank you very much. Maybe let me allow honorable members to ask questions of that so that then they can add on the presentation. I know I have confused you because I have not allowed them to do the full presentation, but because I know that you've had the presentation with you for some time. So let me hear from members and then they can add on.
Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the short presentation. In your opening remarks, Chairperson, you asked the entity to explain what are they going to do with the repeated findings, and I'm on that point, Chairperson. On the Auditor General's report, that under the quality of submitted annual performance report, the NHBRC on three financial years, they have been moved from 7% to get better results. And what we would like to know is that what are the plans and commitments, and by when these actions will be realized, and corrective measures are being implemented. Because in 2013 and 14, we were sitting at 67%, 14-15 also 67%, and in fact this year we are back. 15-16, you went down from 67% to 33%, which is totally unacceptable. You know, at least 67% were above 50%. It's not acceptable, but if you go below, you go down below 50%, really, what is the senior management managing? In that regard. And the second one is the quality of annual performance plan. It means the problem starts with your performance plan. Because if your performance plans are not realistic, then reporting becomes a problem. Because it means the implementation is not being done accordingly. In that you move from 67%, we have just seated at 67% in all financial years. We need to improve, and we, by the end of 16-17, we should have moved from 67% and then go to the acceptable percentage. And Chairperson, there's a problem with procurement and contract management with the entity. That is, they procure services without sourcing out a quotation, and the explanation by yourself is that your staff members were not aware of the procedure. Really, the QCMA has been around since when? It's an embarrassment to give that kind of explanation. Something, somewhere, somehow, it means the staff is not being trained, is not being equipped, or they do it deliberately and they hide behind it to didn't do. And that might come to end. Like, I can see that what the general is asking you to hold the transversal accountable for that. But also, there's also an irregular expenditure of 13 million. Again, the supply chain processes were not followed. Because the 13 million is above the amount where you should for quotation. And my last one, Chairperson, deals with the IT, that the formal security policy is not in place. And really, the organization deals with IT systems. And why there is no policy to secure and this was raised during the previous financial year by the Auditor General. It means the second time the same thing is not done for the whole 12 months, and then the following 12 months is not done, 24 months really, just to develop a security policy. And today we'd like to have a commitment. Would define when are you going to develop such a policy and be reported to us, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Supporter.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think part of my comments have been covered by Honourable Bashe. But just to touch on the issue of also irregular expenditure. And I think I will sum up with a slide that is a second slide before the thank you where you are asked to ask questions. I'm just asking, I don't know, Chairperson, maybe the fact that you asked NSDRC to summarize to me, they it was like they were confused as to what is it that they need to report off, because they only touched the points that you have raised. And I mean, when AG was here just for AG, not for NSDRC. So I was expecting a better presentation, even if it's on a high level from NSDRC, but I thought what they have given us, it was just what you have asked. They didn't give us like the confidence to say, this is where we are and this is where we want to go. Also checking on the issue of performance. I want to agree with Honourable Tarasha to say the performance is not improving in terms of NSDRC, even though Usonge, as I said, I mean, tried to give us a background, especially in terms of the figures and why things are not going well with NSDRC. Also, the fact that there's this irregular expenditure. The answer you are giving this committee is not convincing. Just to say the disciplinary is in place. I mean, we don't want the disciplinary measures only. We also want the commitment from NSDRC to say these things will not happen going forward, and this is what we are going to do to make sure that we correct that situation. So that did not come very strong from NSDRC. I must say that it was a bit disappointed from my side, because it was not convincing what you guys gave us. Thank you, Shepherd.
I think maybe I must probably take the 80% of the blame for their way of presentation. Maybe I really did confuse them. So I think for that I'm taking 80% of the blame from them. But it doesn't, then it doesn't absolve the indicative from the issues that have been raised. And I think one of the things that I want to stress probably and take home with is the fact that when the chairperson of the board started the presentation, said the turnaround program that they had put in place, maybe they must be given an opportunity to come and present that turnaround program. And I think maybe the committee must agree with me, so that we then allow that while we are dealing with these issues that they have responded to, next week when we are dealing with the rest of the four entities, the week after, let us allow NHBRC to come back, to come and present that turnaround program to us, which means in 2 weeks' time from now. And then we can then engage on those quantitative issues that they have not presented now today, whilst they are going to respond to the questions that we have raised. But I'm just saying, let us allow them to come back, to come and present the turnaround program. And then in that meeting, the way they will come back and present the turnaround program, we can then deal with a lot of other issues that we would have loved you to ask, but obviously we are not going to have enough time to deal with. For instance, I know that members would have loved to ask you any question that they, as the human settlement, we are still dealing with issues of rectification even today. And yet, one of your main tasks is to make sure that you actually you put it so nicely in the mandate and in your objectives that you say you represent the interest of the house and consumers, providing warranty protection. Mm-hmm. And we are still sitting with a problem today of houses that must be rectified again and again, and your inspectors are the ones that say those houses are fit and ready to be occupied. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a question that we will engage with them when they come back to present that turnaround program. Because for me, that's the big issue, that the department is still sitting with the rectification, yet we've got NHBRC that we've put in place because we had hoped that NHBRC is going to diminish this issue of rectification. And I know that because you did not have the opportunity to present in detail, then we couldn't engage with that issue. But I'm saying in 2 weeks, you are going to come back, present the turnaround program, and then we are going to deal with those issues. But in the meantime, can NHBRC respond to the questions that have been asked by the members? Thank you so much.
In terms of performance, for 14-15 financial year, as I stated before, we achieved a total of 29%. And the reason for that was due to the fact that I raised earlier to say that our targets were indeed based on turnaround times, and we were not aware that we were going to be caught with the auditors in terms of saying that if one factor of the three was not met, the whole target is not met. So that is how we ended up with the 29% that we achieved for the 2014-2015 financial year. But for 2015-16, we had moved the turnaround times to level 2. We had the actual numbers. But what we did, because we realized that the gap there was that our annual performance plan was not submitted to the Auditor General for auditing purposes before we can submit it for approval to the Minister. And for 2016-2017, we have submitted our APP to the Auditor General. It was audited and they said our key performance indicators are smart. So we hope that in that way we'll be able to see some improvement because our key performance indicators are smart. The other gap that we also realized as an entity was that we were monitoring our performance on a quarterly basis. Now we said, instead of waiting for 3 months for us to go through our performance and check that the portfolio of evidence is provided, we are monitoring our performance on a monthly basis. So that means at our executive level, we compile a monthly report and we thoroughly discuss it at EXCO, and we are trying to hold executives and managers accountable to ensure that the targets that are stated in the annual performance plan are monitored and are met on a monthly basis, because we can't use the excuse that because of the turnaround times, etc., etc. So that is how we are trying to bring some improvement in terms of our performance, just to make sure that we monitor performance.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of irregular expenditure, I think we do acknowledge that we had some challenges, namely issues of capacity within our SDM office, issues of gaps between our own supply chain management policy and the regulations from National Treasury, and three, lack of process maps and procedures. This has been a concern for Council as well. So what have we done since Council came on board? Number one, we have aligned our current SDM policy to the National Treasury regulations, so all those gaps have been closed. Secondly, we went through a transformation process of the Supply Chain Management Office, looking at the capacity of the individuals within that office. So in terms of capacity, those issues have been resolved. And also there was a lack of training in terms of understanding what is expected of officials in terms of the PFMA as well as the regulations from Treasury. So we have trained our officials in our supply chain management office as well as in our provincial offices. So we can make a commitment that going forward, the issue that has been picked up by the AG in the past will not be recurring going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chairperson, as Council and as federal organization, we take irregular and fruitless expenditure very seriously, such that we established a committee of council which sat for almost a month looking at all issues, irregular expenditure. And we came up with findings and recommendations, and we have requested management to implement those recommendations. And I think my colleague is correct that the starting point was to build capacity at the level of the supply chain management, and of course the reviewing of our policies and processes. We found that, among other things, actually most of the problems are not very serious, in the sense that, as you referred to some of them, the fact that instead of going for a three-coat on a cleaning company, we would go for one company for consecutive 3 years of the same company for some reason that could not be understood. The other challenge is the interpretation of a single source, sole source, you know, those kind of things that if they are abused, the Auditor General has a problem with that. So hence, I think as you correctly pointed out, and as I requested, I think if we could be allowed to come and present, we'll give you a detailed presentation on measures that we have taken so far.
Okay. Thank you very much. I know we would have loved to engage with you more. You are coming back on the 8th of November. 8th of November. We will communicate with you the venue and the time, but 8th of November. And when you do come back, make sure that the team that you bring is a bit representative of gender. We don't really, we understand that you are very happy with them, but can you bring women as well? You brought a young man, youth is here, we appreciate that. But if you bring a young woman as well. you've been very good for the past 2 to 3 years. I don't know what happened. You always brought a very fair team, and I always commended your team. You have regrets. I don't know what happened. But thank you very much. We are done with you. and you are not going to present if you don't know.
Are you sure?
I want to know.
Are you sure he's
young? Well,
he looks young.
Okay, he looks young. Okay.
Okay.
No, that's that. Thank you so much. get ready. As you are getting ready, you are not going to take us through the whole thing. But I'm not going to say now what you must do, because I don't want you to see you. But at 11 o'clock, we will be done. So don't give us the whole history. At 11 o'clock, we will be done. So we want high-level presentation. High-level. I don't want to focus on now. You see, another group that I said, teenager, see, was confused by me. So I'm not going to say, I'm not even going to give them the issue. Okay. I keep quiet. That they must record.
Bye-bye. See you on
the 8th of November. We'll see you. At 11 o'clock on the spot, whether you are done or not, I stop and go to the next. While they are setting up, I think, Chair, start introducing your team and do your chairperson's work, because you are going to have not enough time, unfortunately. Don't worry about them going out. Talk to me. I'm here. The most important person is going to be here. Celebrate.
Come here now with a lot of hope. There's quite a lot of things that has happened that is showing us that at least the CSOS very soon is going to be doing what Parliament has asked it to do. In that regard, we note that we are busy now operationalizing both the CSOS Act and the SPSMS. Especially with regard to what happened in the previous year, that on the 25th of May, the National Assembly adopted a regulation. And we want to thank the committee for supporting us in that regard. And then the minister signed off the regulations on the president in August 2015. And then in October 2015, October and November, as we reported, we had these public consultations and we picked up a lot of suggestions and a lot of interest that we picked up. And then we had a task team that responded to the submissions that we got from the public. And then in December, the board approved the amendments as informed by what we got from the public consultations. Those methods that they were to assist us in going forward. And then by 19th December this year, the minister approved the tabling of regulations before Parliament. So as we are now, we have done the district resolution models and amended them by the board, they are ready. All the policies are in place. And we were really preparing for the eventuality of the proclamation by the president of the Act, both the Act, Section of Titles Management Act and the Census Act. So as of now, as much as we are reporting about 2015-16, it is now a matter of public knowledge that the legislative framework now is ready. The CISOS doors are open. The president is proclaimed. And what we are busy now is what do we do now to ensure that we put into operation our state of residence so that we receive now the cases for education. We are busy preparing for collection. So this report that will be done as much as 2015-16, it comes with excitement on our part that now we are ready to hit the roadblock. I will then ask Mr. Interpret, as we have been told, the time is at our side, to briefly deal with matters of operation. As a matter of introduction, it's Mr. Interpret on the other side, who is the chief ombud and the CISOS. Is Mr. Temba Mabuya, who is the Chief Financial Officer next to him. And then it is Mr. Mawanda Chadezweni, who is the Acting Head of Strategy in our office. And then we have a lady behind us who is the provincial. I don't think Mawanda is a little bit younger, but we have a woman as well there.
Where is she?
She chooses to cook for us. Otherwise, Madam Chair, it's a time that we're excited to take off.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairman of the Committee, and the Honourable Members and colleagues. We have divided our annual report in the format, annual report formation and presentation in the format of the annual report, which has been set before this House, starting with the adjudication and governance. And then the Chief Financial Officer will definitely come on with the audit findings and as well as the remainder of action through the government, within the secretary. And then we will cover with the internal audit, and there will be the strategic planning within the Chief Ombuds Office, and then going forward. In case of the members, I'm not going to waste time about the regulation
health offices in all three provinces, which are covering the Congo, as well as Northwest and KwaZulu-Natal, covering Mpumalanga, as well as the Free State, and the Western Cape, covering the Northern Cape and Eastern Cape. So we have recruited all over the province, all over the country. IT is up and running, and this is what it as well. So it's not easy in terms of what we have done. And in page 2 of the 82 of the annual report, the consultation process that went through, during October and November last year, typical management in terms of the staff we had at the completion of this annual report, is continuing. We already had four staff and that is coming, not three, out of the six. Corporate governance, we have the full board complement with the new board starting in January this year, for the period of 3 years as well. And we have four subcommittees of the board, new operational. During the year under review, we have six, the board has met six times, all the time, meeting the requirements of the forum, and we have 22 subcommittees. Okay, and all this has been good functioning since April last year. So, this is the chief ombudsman's office in terms of risk. We have done our framework, it's been implemented. The strategic risk profile was done it at PC2. No fraud was reported or found during the material abuse. We have the compliance framework, compliance have approved by the board. Audit and risk committee objectives, risk management initiatives of this financial aid within implemented throughout the financial aid. Chair, on the performance information is 85 and 40. And you will notice that on the voting community skills business, which is more critical than you. We basically achieved one target out of three. The main thing is that we have not been covered by legislation. We did, we have punched more than our weight in that. We did a lot of compilation on top of those different recommendations, some compilation on it, and we succeeded. We have subsequently achieved this target this year in the sense that now we are able to do the decision that has been passed that we need to include the arbitration part of the government. On the second strategic objective, in the take custodian control of the community scheme governance from local government and from head office, we only achieved 50% of that in the sense that we needed to take almost all of them, but we did not take from the big office because we needed to get the MOU between the Ministry of Finance. But now that the federal credit law, we don't need to do that. We need to be taking over. So, it has been achieved. On strategic objective 3, is managed efficiently. We achieved the strategic sustainability target as well. We cannot be that efficient if we cannot do everything that we need to do. That we have still the entire staff complement due to the fact that we have some budget constraints. But definitely a risk that for the community. On the performance information, some of the targets have not been achieved as well. All in all, in terms of the achievement, we have 59%. You know that budget constraints have been the main reason, and of course, the delay in the approval of the budget, and of course, the agreement that we have submitted to buy for 10 million from the department. But almost all of it now will be, has been actually to achieve for the proclamation and application on the 7th of October of the year. Now we take it to the CFO to take us to the side.
And that comprises of PPE, that's the property plant, the equipment of 7.6 million, the purchase of, as I indicated, intangible assets, that's the licenses, and including other receivables of 250,000. So the last leg of the cash flow statement is the financing activity, made up of movement in short term borrowing, and cash equivalent at the beginning of the year of around 29.9, and cash and cash equivalent at the year end of around 10.3. Then the last statement of the financial is that one of the budget and actual talk on page 62 in the annual report, where we reflected that the government grant of 39.5 million is subjectively and fully utilized. That shows a good alignment between the entity and the department. And the 40 million that you see on page 62, which is a 40 million deficit, it was as a result of an over budget of 15.9 million on personnel. We budgeted around 54 million in terms of the figures we have taken in the annual report. And then the actual that happened was around 30 million. So the difference of those 40 million was the over budget for us. Because we budgeted according to our structure. So because of these measures that we applied, the authority measures, so we couldn't further appoint people. So that is the situation at around 13 million. I think that's 24 that we thought we achieved when we had achieved the entire target of our cost. And then we had a 20.8 million deviation. This is as a result of the levy income that we initially budgeted. We thought that in the year under review, we will start collecting the levy. But due to the delay in the progress of the approval of the regulation, so that 20.8 million was never realized. So we showed it, but it became a deviation for us. Before the chief on that comes in, our audit outcome was unqualified with the type of emphasis. There is an item on regular expenditure, which happened on two items. One was the issue of rent cover, which totaled around 2.8 million. This came as a result of the capacity issue within CISOS. Our alumni was the first employee with CISOS, and at that time, that's when I had to deal with the issue of remedies. There was no supply chain remedies in place. So that was remedied when we started appointing more people. Now we have the supply chain remedies, which we indicated in the legal plan. The second one was the issue of refurbishment of office furniture in both KZN and the Western Cape, where we had challenges where employees had to work outside for the dinner. So the service provider that was appointed was looking after the housing, making sure that was refurbishing housing, had to be requested also to look at the Western Cape and the KZN. So that's where now we had sort of like a deviation of around 2.3 million. That was the original part of it, because you are appointed at 1 million for the establishment of housing, and I had to do the same thing and then. So provision was not enough, because and that difference came in the same stretch. I think that's for the check.
Mention the changes, what are we planning to do going forward? We would like to what the chair has indicated, and as a result of what happened on the 7th of October, when the legislation and regulations were published for commencement. So we just want to remember that on 2014-15 was the year of deadline and planning and capacity building.
My comment is just that you were able to also to explain to us what happened to the other over expenditure of 1.5 million, but it did not give us a plan that what is your plan going forward, that when you establish other offices in other regions, do you have a plan that you don't have a repeat of what has happened between trying to establish offices in the and then the other one is this is what came out of communication and report. On your quality of annual performance plan as well, you are 2016, you are 33%, and that's really now it's not acceptable. We can understand when the entity was very small and no budget, a sizable amount of budget allocated, that 33%. In fact, on the first year, you did very well. Not very well, but at least 67%. And then in your 2014-15, 67%. And now when we thought that you are well established, then you go down, you go below 50%, what is it, what's wrong with you? And what should be planned going forward? They say you improve on this, you can't be below 50%. And the other one, the checklist, and that on your performance indicators, is that two of your performance indicators were not achieved, and the reasons that are put by the root causes are put by the HG, but the management not ensured that those indicators as well and targets are realistic and they should be achieved, and we want when we come back quarterly, and the thing the checklist is going to tell you when to come back as well. You must convince us and say that the tools really are in place. And the last one is besides what you have explained, that I suspect you have noted, but we have found to be not being able to prevent irregular expenditure. This is that was the 8.3 million. But earlier on, the CFO explained that, but in future, really, it can be acceptable. We note that because the AG says that you are not complying with the procurement process. And they must make sure that the management of the entity is adhered to those regulations. And then the last one, Chairperson, is on your own report, or no, I think it's the one that you actually checked, that I said they uploaded, I make a note of it already, and you were able to explain it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, my few comments from affairs is that I think we are in a little bit disappointed. I think I must start there. You started on a high note on your first day of your exam. You had a clean audit. Second day of your exam, you are having an unqualified audit with findings, one of them being a peer review, which for me, even the explanation from the CFO is not convincing enough. I hear another matter what you say, she understands, I don't. I don't understand, but, and I also know that your explanation only covers 5.3 million. It doesn't cover the entire amount that the EG has identified. I know exactly the amount that the EG has. But your explanation covers only 5.3. What about the rest? And for me, if, because you are just starting to be operational, in your first of being operational, you then have these findings on you. Now my worry is that if you are fully operational, you must expect therefore a qualified audit. When you are fully operational, we must then expect a disclaimer, because you started on clean, so it means you are slowly going down. You must convince us that that's not going to happen, that this unqualified audit that you received in this financial year is the last. We are not going to get it again. To me, that's what I want to hear. And obviously, we're going to hear that by what you have put in place in terms of making sure that it doesn't happen again. I hear what the CFO said, but now, have you put systems in place to make sure that we then mitigate around this issue? The other worry that I have is that on your first year of starting to be operational, you lose three staff members. Three, that one, according to your report. Three staff members, you lost. Now, I'm a bit worried. How many more are we going to lose when you start to be really operational? If you lose three on your first year of being operational, what happens when you become three? So what were the problems and challenges that made you lose three staff members in your first year of being at least 80% of parish staff? And then we dealt with those issues that are going to make you not to lose more staff when you are becoming full of staff. I think for me, those are things that can make me comfortable as you respond to this thing. Because it doesn't inspire confidence, the fact that when you start being operational, then it means you were not ready. When you came to us with your clean audit, you told us, we are ready. We're ready now to roll out. We're ready to work. We're waiting for you, committed to help us have this documentation. Now, as you start being operational, it looks like wheels are getting off. So it gives a warning. It says to us, you were not 100% ready. So what were you doing in all that year that you were supposed to be getting ready? When you have to start to show us, your readiness will get off. So for me, I thought, I have to say that. I hear, what was very nice with you today. I don't know what you gave her. But unfortunately, I'm not going to be that one. But maybe you will respond, if you respond, and then the chairperson of the board concludes, we will understand, and maybe, and then we take it forward. But I think, for me, the whole purpose is to say, tighten up. We don't expect you to get worse than you are. We expect you to get better. Go back to the glory that you had when you came to us and said, we were very proud of you when you had a clean audit. Now, we can't be told that because now there was only one step. Oh, there was one step already there when you had the clean audit. We understand that. The staff issue cannot be the reason, even when you had that clean audit. So, what is it that you are not doing okay? And go back to those things and be able to deal with them so that we don't see the West. I think I'm trying to caution against the West. We don't want to see the worst of what is happening. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, Chair, I would like to start before the CFO comes in, just to start about, as you talk, you're talking like the Chair talking to us in terms of what we should be doing. Firstly, Chair, I just want to tell you that we have come up with that plan to address all the audit findings that have come up with us, who will do what, by when, which was going to be presented to the next board of October. We are quite aware of that. Definitely nobody wants to go to October, and it's not going to happen. Please take my word. We will definitely be more improving as we get more resources. Remember, Chair, that at the time, CEO was alone, one, there was no, definitely no supply chain systems, even policies at the time, which were put together. We have a supply chain manager now. We have recently, the board done proper delegation of authority in terms of who does what and what are the powers. We have now, Chair, set up right from specification to adjudication committee with clear policies and limitations. Who stops what? So I can assure you that they are going forward will not be worse than what has happened in the previous year. We are, in fact, improving now going forward. And to the issue of the performance, designated the setup as an exciting critical library, which was quite easy. We definitely put up the systems in place, but somehow we understated how the parliamentary process evolved in terms of the law coming into effect. We felt that on the first year we have patched enough. We thought we can still do that, but it was not now really beyond us. We put up some targets that later on we realized that we could not achieve. We're not going to be able to do half of the key work that we do
all this code they're going for and hoping that would soon be sufficient.
Secondly, is to say that when it comes to matters of performance, the reality is we put together an APP, which we believe that was going to be financed in terms of the government grant in the May. And we were hoping that, second, there would be some amount of money would come from connections, which has been mentioned before. But in the middle, there has been quite a number of directives from Treasury to cut on a number of areas, and we were not spent. Spent on a budget which was not even that much, but was enough to do what we had to do. So the issue of funding has been the major contributing factor for us not being able to achieve what we put on the APP that we achieved. So we had to adjust the APP in terms of what we could afford and what we could give. So, correctly, the committee is correct. What you said you're going to do, you did not do. But in between that is because in the process, there has been a lot of cutting and unavailability of funding to do those activities. Hence, the appeal now has as the executives are saying, with regard to self-sustaining, I'm sure now we have a no better reasonable and realistic annual performance plan that now will be informed by the budget that we will form part of contributing to as we'll be starting collecting the data. And lastly, and one of the things that you rightfully picked up is the issue of the tree staff. The reality is we have lost quite a lot of staff and key staff. And the only reason for that is the people felt insecure. People felt that we don't know where is this thing going. These are young, dynamic men and women who are looking after their careers. When they saw that CISO's financial situation is bleak, people started looking around. And of course, when you hit that kind of situation, the first people who leave are those people who are good because they're marketable. They go out there and they find jobs quickly. And then I must say we lost quite key, very good people because of this funding situation. But we are committed now that from now on, it is our issue to do it. But next time we'll do it. And I'm sure we'll have a better idea. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We hope that some of the things that you, the challenges that you put into your staff before us, they are in the FN over to visit the department and go to you. And they are assisting you to the agency. Because remember, you have an agency of the agency. So don't behave like you are an offer. You are all alone. And no good is empty because the department that is talking to them. So I'm hoping that your organization will actually take the same conversation. And yes, there are certain commitments that the AG is making that you are supposed to be in dealing with. And we would want you. In writing that you decide to take control of, but in writing with how that needs to deal with this situation and the call. If you don't do that, then there are nothing to talk about. You know this is what you're doing. Thank you very much. Don't look so despondent. You've got a reverend amongst your friends.
Thank you.
meeting, the questions, the discussion, all is done within 1 hour. So don't talk like you've got the whole thing.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, honorable members. Also, the DG President and the representatives from the Department of Human Settlements. Chair, we are pleased to be here and to present our report. Today, we will not focus on the mandate issues and those ones people can be aware of our scope and the items that we do focus on. So, Chair, I will then go to some of the slides. If I can maybe ask members to look at your page, maybe page 3. You're also talking about the EAB as an organization that must respond to the government-wide priorities. So we have to look at intensifying home ownership through programs of induction in the affordable establishing transaction of affordable for the housing market, how we can monitor the report and look at the reporting in the secondary housing market. So I think as government we need to know what are the movements happening in all levels of the market. To conduct analysis and dissemble information on the public trends and the values in affordable markets. But look regular and plus also the big driver that is done by the department is where the site will be project will play a big role in terms of that. So for us, we see over and above our own 1976 Act as a mandate, we also look at the National Development Plan where property must be an item that is a very specific focus so we can see how we find ourselves in improved quality of household life through ownership of property. Our vision is clear, our values are clear, Chair, our legislative mandate is very clear. It is important to note that it is a big indictment, I think, on how the market operates, that we find ourselves in a situation where our inspection powers were curbed and limited to a function of the law, where constitutionally our inspection powers have been taken away and will be restored through a new process when we make progress as we are with the public practitioner's bill. But the inspection power that has been taken away from us does have an impact on what we look for performance numbers. Some of the strategic objectives could not be met because of the impact of the specific item here. But as we can say to the committee that this challenge will be resolved because we have taken the input from the Constitutional Court and we have changed the conditions but in such a way through the leadership of the department that is actually responding to a new order and legislative environment in South Africa. Chair, in terms of our organogram, not to focus on those kind of things, what I would like to maybe look at is some of the innovations that I think we have been looking at in terms of page 8 on the slides with the members. We did find a situation where estate agents would operate in the market with or without a license, but we battle to expose them to consumers. And the challenge is that you may be dealing with someone who has a business card to advertise themselves under a big brand, but actually while you're dealing with that person, you are not sure that they have a license. And it's very difficult for us. The only time we find out that the person that you are dealing with is when things went wrong. And by then you've already not received your deposit, then when you've also lost money, and we have to find a solution for that. What they have done, we brought an innovation where on every single email that an estate agent writes to you trying to get business or even is collecting your rent from you or helping you in a buy and sell transaction, we put a seal of authentication in the email signature next to their name, cell phone number, and the property consumer, the buyer, the seller, tenant or the landlord can click on that seal of authenticating that the estate agent is duly licensed at the time. Why that is important for us, it means that the consumer don't have to wait till he meets him to ask him, but I want to see your license, where's your license, and also every single communication. Also when they advertise on the internet, they have to also put the seal up there so it confirms that they're actually duly licensed. January 2017, those fields will update to show that you are duly licensed. It's a big consumer protection initiative so that you can choose where to interact with you, which is largely via emails around the website, that you can see you're dealing with someone's using it. So that's really important work. Chair, I want to mention that this is also a first in South Africa, and the EAB is the first regulator to have an innovation like that. The Financial Services Board is following, and also the Law Society is also starting to say let us actually show where the licensed people are, so we can eradicate who are not licensed, Chair. Another important thing that we thought is important while we talk about all the regulation is we have to know what the size of the South African residential property market is. And here we've put a graph that actually shows where all the value is. We can see that on the deeds registry, there is 6.3 million title deeds that is registered. And then we can see these are under the registry, the residential property. So we are adding to that. And to the question of the previous meeting, where is the RDP and BNG housing? So this will all be added as we do the title deed restoration. But also to note here, that already there's 4.5 trillion rand worth of value nationally shown to us here, and we can see on which of the provinces the focus area is where most of the property numbers and most of the property values are. So each of the provinces you can see where they are concentrated in number of residential units, but also value out of that 4.5 trillion rand of residential properties. We also brought out a graph that indicates the super luxury houses over the value of 3 million and above, what is the percentage of the full property market in terms of that? So we also to see where are the various categories that we are seeing the trust is oriented to more property education, but also to help with the wealth creation aspect where property has to be now cut. So Chair, this is good information for consumers to know so that as they are working in the market, they know where to invest and where they can see the value of tracking for themselves. For us, an important step that we look at how many people are legally operating in the market, and this is one of our core functions. How many estate agents are there that own the businesses, how many work for them, and how many intern estate agents we have. And this graph is showing to us that by the number of licenses that we issue for individuals and for firms, where are we moving from? You can see there's an upward trend with the number of licenses that we issued in 2015 is increasing compared to when we look at 2016. A very important one for us, also look at the gender representation. We want to see how many males are operating, how many females are currently in this industry. That is correctly, so it's a female-dominated industry. What we are trying to do now in this is to add more females, more males, but also the youth category, and also making sure that it is representative of our demographics of our country. I think we've also been looking at prevention. I think this is quite an important one. So you can see where the concentration of estate agents per province. And we can see how things is dominating from a number of registers in the Western Cape and KZN. And we are seeing we have to do more. That's when you need to understand where the property value is. There are a lot of areas, like in the Mbombo, where growth is on a very, very high growth trajectory. And we need to put more registrants in that province specifically to respond to high activity when it comes to property in the area. Demographically, what we have wanted to see is what we are getting right. We are looking at how many people, when we look at the size of the 2015, 2016, how many African members do we have and is it growing? What is the numbers moving? If we look at the colored population, how many people are joining, how many staying, are the numbers growing? And also for Indian populations, we can see there is a thrust of growth compared to 2015, 2016, where more of our African colored and Indian communities also joining the industry and also staying in the industry, which is the important one we want to achieve. The slide that we have next is also indicating us how the growth is showing by the provinces, but the one I want to focus on is on page 12. Where we can see new registrations. And Chair, this is where we are saying, what are we doing, what are we getting right to do? New people joining the industry. So there's a category there, which is called a very big graph, which shows the intern estate agents. And that is where we're saying, can we get new people on the new legislation to join the industry. And clearly we can see that in 2015, 2014, there was over 6,000 new persons joining the industry. And then we see also an upward trend when you look at the end of March 2016, another 6,600 persons joined the industry. So we are very positive about seeing people coming into the industry. What we do want to see is for them to end on the other side owning these businesses. So people are also moving from a level of an intern to the next level, but so we can see there are new people joining our industry, which is what we want to achieve. Chair on education and family is an important component. We do need certificates to meet the qualifications, and we do have a partner under higher education. So the CETA, who is creating all the NK4, NK5 qualifications, and they train the state agent through the accredited service providers to do all the qualifications. What does happen is, after you've completed all of those qualifications, you do write an exam with the EAB at the board. And here we can see how many people have qualified for the qualification of real estate from NKF4 level, and how many people have qualified for the NKF5 level. NKF5 qualification is the one that allows you to own your own business. And we are working towards more of our previous VAT individuals to complete this qualification so that they can become the new business owner. In terms of members joining our industry as an equivalent other qualification, we also see how many people have a qualification that's already equivalent to NTF4 and NTF5, and we can do an exemption for them on an equivalency basis so they can come straight into our industry with no additional qualifications required. In terms of our bar exam, that is an exam that you write after you've got your NTF4 and NTF5 qualifications. You write the board exam with us. We see there are more people writing these exams every year, and those are the qualifications that give you the professional designation behind your name to be called a professional practitioner in real estate. And that's what you write after your name, Brian Chaplin, PPRE. Or you can become a master practitioner in real estate. To be Brian Chaplin, master practitioner in real estate behind your name. Those are the names that I'm talking about. So those are the, we created a profession. That's what we wanted to achieve through this professional designation. So we track how many individuals are going through that, and that is how they become the new business owners. We also track those coming from intern status to full status as a trade agent. In terms of our second level, obviously compliance is a big one that we have to look at, because when things go wrong, it is when we have to interject as a regulator to stop the bus. And there was quite a publicized instance in the Western Cape again where a company called Bayer's Realty had defrauded the state of our client for their money about $7.5 million, and that's when our compliance enforcement starts kicking in. So we do get complaints from various sources. We get complaints through the post, from consumers, through the mail, online, walking clients, whistleblowers, and those complaints are the ones that we go and verify to see that we can follow through the complaints. Here we're showing the number of complaints we've received. Chair, we believe that the complaints received give you an indication of how consumers are experiencing the services that they are receiving from the regulated estate agent that we have. And we can see there is an upward movement where there are more complaints received. And the one thing we are saying, that is what we want to do, meaning that we're doing more consumer awareness that if something goes wrong, you know where to come. You must come to the EAB to lay your complaint. And the more we create that awareness, the property consumers, tenants and buyers, landlords, sellers can know that if there is something go wrong, they can complain to us. So we then also track how many we finalize. The reason that we do find complaints is not within our jurisdiction, but we have relationship with the rental housing criteria. And now receiving resources, we were able to refer those complaints to them so that property consumers can receive assistance through us. Even the complaint was 100% in our jurisdiction, we take into our system or other entity who can assist with the complainant. Procedures. We obviously subject all of those cases where we can't resolve it, we take it to the disciplinary procedure, and here we also give how many convictions we've had, how many acquittals were there, and how many cases are still pending in the procedure. So here we have the inspections, and the inspections is the big KPI that we were not able to achieve on due to the fact that the Autumn Alliance case translated into a change in our abilities to do the inspection. Our target here was to do much more than we did in 2015. We did about 1,000 inspections, but due to that COVID, we did not complete our inspection cycle for this year. Here we also try to indicate which are the kind of conserventions we are finding when we do in each of the province. If we find an individual not trading legally, we indicate which section of our act we are conserving. So the first one, section 26, is an indication that the individual is trading without a license, and that means it's stopped because they are very vulnerable to a property consumer. Where there are trust account violations, they cross line of trust, we also track, and so we go to each one of these aspects to see where we need to find the biggest irregularities we want to report here. We'll also look at per province, where are the sore points where we have the most contravention. And we also look at, in terms of our education requirements, are they compliant with the education requirements as we experience it too. A big one for us is also our responsibility in terms of the Financial Impairment and Fintech Act. And here we indicate what are the instances of contravention that is with that act that we have to enforce. We look at whether or not there is any money laundering happening or any other suspicious transaction happening to the property that is reported or not reported. And we follow that through our structures here. So, Chair, I think auditing is a very important comfort assurance that is provided, and the entire sector is required by law to submit their audit reports to us, meaning that their auditor will give a confirmation that, in fact, their books are in order. And what we did see over the years, in the past, 5 years ago, there was very low compliance, where they did not even have themselves audited or even submitted the audit report to the EAB. So every state agency must complete the audit, and the auditor must give it to us. We can see, oh, they are checking, it's fine. But we, through those, we've been blocking their license until they give the report, and once we started doing that, we see now there's 85% compliance where the audit reports are coming in time. So the red portion here would say they would have to go through a regularization procedure where they have to pay fines after the due date. They are now late, now they're going to state of penalties, and so they can only clear that by going through a process of regularizing themselves, and also here a disciplinary why would you late, but they have to submit it. They cannot get a license for the next year until they submit the debt. So it ends with 100% compliance, but at least in time with 85% in time. In terms of audit reports, it's been a very good tool and it gives us the comfort. Here we give you the indication of the claims, how many claims are we receiving. The claims come from consumers, and this is where we are there for. How much claims do we receive and how much do we pay out? And it's important that the consumer knows if he's got money, you're trying to find his money from the state agent, but at the end of the day, you're giving money from the EAB, and that is the process that you just input on this. We have also the process where if someone does not complete his administrative process, we will exclude him from the market until he's gone through that. And this is where the disqualification is shown to us. They've been disqualified either because of a non-compliant letter to the audit report, and we keep them out of the industry because that's not the correct procedure. Chair, we are not going to talk much about the tax restoration process because the department reports on that. But our numbers align with what the department is indicating. Where are the totals, how many statements have been restored, and what the process of the department does to gain through that. I'm going to move on to the financial aspects. I think some of the other slides we have to do more integrated human resource reports and so forth, but the time to ask CFO to take us to the financial components of the slide that we have. Also dealing with the audit related matters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO, and honorable members, honorable chairs, and colleagues from other entities. Just on the issues of financial reports, I'm just going to start. attitude to that. But obviously the challenge is to ensure that we maintain that status going forward. And also to ensure that not only do we maintain that, but it translates into a clean administration, translates into a better service to the state agents, and more transformation in this particular industry. In terms of financial position, I'm just going to make a quick comment that as at the end of the financial year, 2016, we are still financially sound, but we are cautious that our cash reserves are diminishing. So going forward, we need to raise more revenue in order to fund our operations, particularly our capital expenditure. Over the past few years, we've been investing more into the ICT and introducing online services for our estate agents. They are now able to register online. They are now able to undertake our training online, allocate coins online. They are able to download NFCs online and interact and transact with us online. But this infrastructure must be maintained going forward. And ideally, the infrastructure cannot be financed from the current year revenue. So we need to accommodate that accommodation reserves so that we are able to maintain, but also improve on our online offerings. In terms of financial performance, last year we have reported a loss of 2.6 million. It has improved to just a break-even point of 188,000. But as I've mentioned, we need to grow that and start making surpluses so that we're able to increase our capacity. In terms of the estate agent fidelity fund, just to recall that this fund is maintained in order to protect the consumers against the losses they suffer at the hands of the estate agent, as scrupulous estate agents. We do reinvest people who lose their deposits. And this is for that purpose. The fund is adequately capitalized, but we are also noting that there has been an increase in the number of claims. As CEO has mentioned, we also noted that there have been some estate agents who are continuing to embezzle and steal money from the poor, and we need to ensure that we work with the law enforcement agencies because that will translate into the decline in the value of the fidelity fund as we pay out more and more claims. So adequate preventative measures need to be put in place, hoping that in the new legislation we'll be able to enhance that kind of a gap through working with the law enforcement agencies. In terms of the surplus performances, we have improved our surplus. Ordinarily, this surplus, our aim is to ensure that it increases at the value, which is more than the inflation. And also, Chairperson, to mention that the estate agency fidelity fund is a separate entity, and we have also obtained a clean audit in all areas of compliance, governance information, as well as the financial information. And I thank you.
Very much. Chris, that gives us our hope to hear that the book this entity has got a signal. Yes, but we also know those that didn't know it would be a miss of them not to get a signal. Sitting all of them there, they are accounted, all of them.
Yeah.
All of them. So, but anyway. Questions of clarity and questions. So that let me start with Honorable Kwai, Honorable Menezi, Honorable Nkatine, Honorable Bam, and Honorable Narakash. Ninjenzi,
let me welcome the report. It's really afraid I'm not up to this, but very personal. Last week, luckily I went to Million. I was the program of the TV called Speak Up. And when I was that program, it was in Houghton, where there are those who call themselves the state agency, but she did, I think, 3 days, more than 200,000. And I just wanted to find out how your relationship with this particular program, because to me, to think that we have been cheated by people who call themselves the state agency, and we have this organization that is doing so much. What is the relationship? How do you take it? And is there anything that you can assist our community on that issue? Because this group has been cheated. And at the end of the day, when these people from there speak out, finalize the issue, these people say, we apologize, we are just going to pay you those 100,000 in the many periods of time. And I wonder what is happening in their poor promises or poor people about the state agency, because people are not good to understand this and how they work. Thanks.
I hope you've got the details, but anyway, if you don't, they can always contact the state to get that information. It would be nice to hear when you come back how you resolve the issue or how you did that. Honorable,
thank you very much. So I think from where you are concluding, I think we must just request a detailed report on the unscrupulous FTDSN. Detailed report, because indeed it is happening to some people. And another focus report on transformation, both on the training of the estate agents and the property market. I think the report that was given today is encouraging. It's making us understand that there's something on the ground. I think for the future report, more information on transformation, because we must transform society. Maybe also on the bill, the speech. I think the bill should move a little bit. I'm happy to see the time coming, because the bill must also move so that it assists us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for an elaborate presentation. On page 25, we just have a conclusion there on the issue of the purposes transformation project. You spoke on the table of sending transfers 14% and purposes issue at 86%. When you go to the pie chart, it doesn't talk the same language. I don't know whether maybe you can clarify on this.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gatineau. Don't confuse my members with pie chart. They understand. Honorable Pam.
Thank you, Chair. I also echo the gratitude expressed for the presentation. It's usually a very interesting program when we talk of the regulation thing. I was going to go more on the transformation and the cheating. Unfortunately, the transformation, I have got a personal experience of being excluded because the estate agent, a white lady who was selling the property, and when the black person was interested in the property, then she and the owner of the property decided that they were no longer there. It's a long story, but I won't go into it. So it has been of interest to me to find out how we can deal with the transformation challenges. Now, again, I'm wondering if there is no way we could look into the soaring property prices, because they are really falling beyond the reach. Especially when it comes to these highly reputable estate agents, the thieves, the pen boldness, and so on and so on, the because their prices are just unbelievable, and I don't know how it would work out to get somebody to actually go and evaluate if these properties are indeed, you know, worth that much. This regulating of prices, I don't know whether maybe we would be intruding onto personal operations, but it really is ridiculous. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutras.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the, our appreciation on the but let me come back to issues of transformation, that the gap is too wide, and really between 31,000.7 to the 3,900, it's just a drop in the ocean. So if I can just sum up, and I'm really echo the way my father committed to me in the report, he said the report on that. And the other issue that is related to the section, this page 20 slide on the page 23, claims and section 27 application, is this a positive thing or is it a negative thing? It's in 2012, 2012 and 2025. And then 2013, 14, 15, the number is below 100. And then 2016 goes up to 2012 and 82. Just for me to understand better whether that is a positive thing or if we could just elaborate. We are new on this. So we would like to, as we move and adopt and accept your report, we need to hear and understand the picture.
Thank you very much. I must say, I'm really proud of you. All the members, you've just been briefed on the point. I'm very proud. I think before you respond, AAB, I think it's going to be important for the department as well to appraise us on how far is the property professional been, because if you hear from the report, some of the things that they could have done better, couldn't do better because they are hindered by the absence of the bill. So it's going to be important just for us to know where and how far the bill is, just so that we are appraised of that. We also, whilst we understand the question, the fact that the issue of recycling duties, every time the department comes to present the quarterly report, they present on this issue. I think it's important what the members have raised in relation to the issue of the pie charts and the charts. So at least we get to understand that what is in the report is not a cut and paste. That's for our own. One area that confused me a bit, is the issue of the complaint pending finalization on that slide. There was a slide that says in 2015 there were about 7 cases, and then in 2016 about 65.
2009. I got confused whether those of 2015, have they then been resolved, or are they still pending? Because you've got a lesser number for 2016. So I couldn't be sure then whether the two numbers, they are still running concurrently, or the other one has been cleared. Maybe I would just need a clarity on that one. And maybe my last part on this issue, I think members have raised the issue of transformation. We all know that this area of the real estate is one sore area where we know that transformation is at a slow pace and it's becoming a problem. You have been dealing with issues of racism around this issue last year. So I think it's going to be important for us that you come back and present to us your transformation agenda so that we can have an understanding. So you will be joining NHBRC on the 8th of November to come and present on your transformation. So that when we finish the year, we know that we've dealt with this issue. So on the 8th of November, you come again. When you talk about transformation, we talk of it even amongst yourselves. Transform. Why are you only male? But anyway, yeah, no, we understand. But the department maybe must respond first on the issue of the property field, and then the AAB must then respond to the particular issue.
Madam Chair, let me first apologize for my argument. I'm not feeling well one day. And we also had a clash in the cabinet meeting. I do not have attended. Brian is very pleased to answer his question, but I'll answer it as well. We're reading the bill to minister this afternoon, it's been 3 o'clock. Immediately after that, once we get it go ahead, we'll put it through the cabinet system. It will go through the DG's forum. The economy, it will help to serve both the economic cluster and the social cluster because it has both implications. We're hoping that the deal will be published for comments soon. Both advocates here, we will have the legal services department in the department and advocate charge from EAAB are the drivers of this process. EAAB is very much aware of what the processes are. But we're hoping, Chair, that this is one piece of legislation where we're running behind schedule. I think we should have passed it for comment by now. It's just that the Minister was not very happy with the consultation processes. We have to go back and consult the Minister for that process. But we're happy now with the draft. We've signed off on the final draft and she has to go through the process. And it will be coming to you as well. Thank you, Chair.
Very much. It would be nice if it could be fast-tracked because one of the reasons why the parliament program has been extended is because of the education area in the department that is lacking. So it would be nice if we can also cut it to AAP.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I would really like to start on the speak-out matter. And just to give the members assurance that we have a very close relationship with Speak Out. Most of the previous programs, we were the other party that would give the insight into the challenge and how it can be solved. Minister Sisulu also was part of some of the previous interviews where RDP houses were being sold by unlicensed individuals and people being defrauded. The good thing about this is that when they lose money, we actually support those ladies will be people that we support to get the money back. Also to say that whatever they do not get from these unregistered estate agents or con people or who claim to be estate agents and stole the money, we will make sure that they do get their money. So that one specifically, we will make contact with Speak Out to make sure that we haven't missed that one because we're always available to actually give part of that, you know, going there and giving out the counter officers. And we shoot our components of it, but we actually found quite a lot of people through that at the regulator to make sure we do not lose money. But the question was what happens in the rural communities, how much awareness, and that is probably retiring now more than on radio, community radio stations, on TV, there needs to be more awareness that if something like this happens, what is your rights? And that's why we are saying we need to do more because some people are losing money. And they are not, they don't know where to go, and that's what we need to actually fight. So Speak Out is playing a good advocacy role for us, but we work very closely with them in terms of that. Yeah.
people into out of the poverty.
such as what we have to work together interministerially to make sure that when government public works deal with their properties, they ensure that the transformation is part of that. Yeah. So, Chair, I really do thank the members for the very good question. There has been a question about when you look at the claims, these claims represent claims from consumers to the fund. So a consumer, in 1 year, how many claims did we receive from a consumer saying, I've lost money? So Honorable, that 200,000 will be one of those claims that will come into our system. So when the numbers go up, I'm saying it's good and bad. The one thing we do want from speakers that must come to us so that consumer can be in a good position. So the claims go up, there's awareness happening, people are not losing money. If the claims are down, we cannot by default say, because no, nothing went wrong, no estate agent did something wrong. So we can't even say bad. We actually think, but our people are aware. We must do more to make people aware that if you lose money, even your rental deposit, they are taking too much of your deposit, and it happens all the time. Should we not make sure that they come to the EAB and we can help them to the procedure? And we have one tool, so we're not going to give you a license if you do what you do. If you don't have a license, which we may expect in that instance, we're going to make legal processes to actually make sure that the money is actually, we will give the money, 200,000 to the ladies who got the money, then we'll pursue them legally, and that's what we do in terms of our function. Yeah, so Chair, thank you very much for that. We'll take a note of the input that you've given to us, and we will be coming back to support you in more detail in terms of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Thank you, the Rebbe. We'll start by allowing, I know that at least for the first time since we've started this term, there's a chairperson of the board. Amongst those men. I don't know which one. No, but then anyway, introduce yourself and then allow how you present to that part. As I have said to the previous entities, the presentation, the discussion, and the response to the question, all that must be within 1 hour. So as I am saying, when you present, you do a high level. The whole discussion and the presentation and everything must be within 1 hour. So we should be finished by one. And I'm sure you will be. We will be finished by one. I can see that we will be finished by one. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Portfolio Committee for Human Settlement. My name is Zubile Makan. I'm the chairperson of the Council of Shema.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Iksha Liggins. I'm a member of Shema.
Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. It is with great pleasure that we present for consideration by the Portfolio Committee the 2015-2016 Annual Report of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority. Chairperson, this annual report of the Shura marks the end of the first year of the Council's 3-year term at the Shura. We were appointed by the Honourable Minister Lindiwe Sisulu in March 2016. The year under review may be described as one that was of strategic planning alignment of the entity's growth trajectory to the National Development Plan, an identification of potential blockages to the achievement of the MTSF target. We had, as the Council, the opportunity to review the work of the previous Council and to reflect on the challenges facing the social housing sector and the role of the Shura in particular. This report, whilst highlighting the many gains of the program, identifies areas where greater collaboration and specific interventions are required. One of the key milestones in the period under review was the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Rory Kabi. He is sitting next to me here on my left, who took up his position on the 1st of February 2016. So as you can see, Chairperson, it's only a few months that he's been in office, after 2 years of us having acting CEOs. Chairperson, with your permission, it is indeed with great pleasure that I ask the CEO of Shura, Mr. Rory Gallagher, to present for your consideration the 2015-2016 annual report for the Social Housing Regulatory Authority.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Board, and the member of the Board. You've been with us before, at least you're not appearing to the committee for the first time. You've presented what you hoped to achieve and what you want to do. Now, let's see what have you done after this time.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I do still have heartburn.
You do.
Chairperson, the Shura Council Chair has done the forward. The presentation is going to just focus on some overview remarks and then the presentation is going to deal with some of the performance issues. We haven't tried to discuss every single indicator in the prior year's APP, but we are going to focus on some of the achievements towards the MTFF targets, as well as the progress with the accreditation of entities for the province and social housing delivery by the province. We're going to make some references, bringing it back to the people that we serve, who are the tenants, on highlights for the period, and then briefly, unfortunately I'm not accompanied by our CFO or our acting CSA, our finance person. But I think the findings of the auditors are fairly straightforward, and I'll present what those findings are, as well as a concern that's no longer a concern, I'm glad to say, about the regular expenditure and what the highlights of the financial statements are. And I'll just end with some comments about upscaling delivery. So, Chairperson, to start with, the 2015-2016 financial year, Charles' work was divided between four different programs. If you want to know what the overall performance of the SHRA was for that period, it was a total performance of 55%. If you break that down per program, the regulations program achieved two of its five targets, which equates to 40%. The institution investment program achieved two of its six targets, which is exactly a third, 33.2%. And the investment management program for that year achieved 100% of its targets. The administration program achieved six out of eight targets, which equates to 75%. All of this, I hope members got a copy of the glossy, a copy of the annual report, the printed annual report. Is all on pages 4 to 6 of that annual report. The trend, though, Chairperson, is positive because, as you see at the bottom of the slide, we ended the fourth quarter at 55%, which was, as we say, it was only promising, it was not good. It was, I suppose you would say, surviving in a way. In the new financial year, the trend is more positive, so we ended the first quarter on 47%. We ended the second quarter on 52%. We are projecting and trying to get above 60% for the third quarter. And then for the fourth quarter, dependent on unit yields and number of units approved, the prospect does exist to get it in the order of about 75% of our total targets. So we'll see where we end on the fourth quarter, but be carefully watching this. Chairperson, some of the important remarks to make is, in fact, the Chairperson has already made the remark that our new council came and was appointed by the Minister just right at the end of the previous financial year. The council was given the task of reviving the strategy of the entity to align it to the given mandate and especially to stabilize the organization. We are glad. We are also jealous. We, unlike the EAAB, do not yet have a clean audit. We do have an unqualified audit. Mm-hmm. And there is one important matter of emphasis which I'll highlight when we get to it. We've also made significant inroads in the fourth quarter of the previous financial year, the year that we're reporting on. And there were very sound efforts to align the operations to the right strategy. Supported through the organizational development project, which has been ongoing in the subsequent financial year. Two emphases that I'd like to make is a strong emphasis on scaling up delivery by building the confidence of the various stakeholders, both internal and external. And a lot of work has been done, especially with the provinces, the local authorities, as well as the lenders and the social housing institutions, and I'll come back to that briefly. We also have been busy making changes to the standard operating procedures of the SHRA, and the main emphasis has been to try to shift the SHRA from being in a responsive mode to being in a proactive mode in partnerships with local and provincial government. If you then look at the unit yield, Although the targets for the first 3 years were very, very moderate, if you go to the medium term, if you go to the medium term targets, they ratchet up. The targets for the first 2 years were very moderate, but they ratchet up year 3, year 4, and year 5, because as you know, the total target is 27,000 units for the medium term. This information is on page 23. At that point, which was 6 months, 7 months ago now, we had achieved a total of 5,107 of 27,000 units, which was 19%. Just briefly to go to accreditation checklist. When we get later in the presentation, we've seen that the advice that we make is that one of the major impediments to reaching the 27,000 units target is actually the management capacity. So some of the provinces are fairly well resourced. For example, the Eastern Cape has 9 accredited agencies and 2 pre-accredited agencies. These 61 agencies throughout all 9 provinces were the number that we had reached by the end of 2015-2016. Subsequent to the end of 2015-2016, we have accredited further institutions, and there is a demonstration, because you asked for that when you made your remarks before my presentation, or the Schwab presentation, Chair, that you are able to measure progress. So at that point there were 61, there are 82. At that point there was a smaller number of fully accredited. There's now more fully accredited. We've now got 13 fully accredited, and some have moved from pre-accredited to conditionally accredited. So the provinces we're not so concerned about from a capacity point of view are, for example, the Eastern Cape has 9 and 2, Gauteng has 19 and 4, KwaZulu-Natal has 6 and 3. We're very worried about Limpopo, Northwest, and Northern Cape. Limpopo has got 1, Northern Cape has got 1 in theory, but I'll get back to that one a little bit later. And then other provinces are like Western Cape, not such a significant problem, 8 accredited and 3 pre-accredited. So Chairperson, we're tracking the accreditation of agencies very, very carefully, and what we're doing is we're linking the accreditation to an institutional investment contract to capacitate these agencies. It pulls through from the capacity on the ground to the provincial performance. Because if you then look at this slide, the same 3 provinces are a big concern. Limpopo has got a target in the MTF period of 1,050 units, a very moderate target, but thus far we haven't managed to produce any units. It's a 0% performance so far. Northwest has got an even more moderate target of 565. We're chasing units and projects in that province. And Northern Cape has got a big problem, but we are in discussions with Northern Cape Province to give them support. They've got a much bigger target of 2,850, and thus far, nothing achieved. But Eastern Cape, Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape have been going reasonably well. This then is up until the end of March, which was the 5,117 units, which represents 19%. So in the work that's been done, both in that financial year and as well as 7 months so far in this current financial year, there's been a very strong emphasis on making unit delivery with building new capacity. Some of the highlights of the period, because we do try, Chairperson, to link the work, because as you know from the National Social Housing Program, yes, it is about increasing the volumes, but it's also about the quality of the urban landscape and whether it's having the desired impact on restructuring and the quality and the experience of people's lives. So for example, this is a typical social housing project, Fairview Link. And this is in Nelson Mandela Bay, and this was the project that in the reporting term did win the national award through the Governor Mbeki Awards for the best social housing project. We're also glad to share with you that the Minister subsequently launched a very similar but an even better project in close proximity called Willow D during the reporting period. And you can see the details of that on page 22. To get to the human element, and this was also profiled on exactly the same program that was referred to earlier, and the Breaking New Ground episode showcased social housing. This was in partnership with the Department of Human Settlements. And some of the human elements were profiled in the reporting year. For example, Mr. George Stokes, who is a pensioner because, as people will know who come from that part of the country, Fairview is actually constructed in an area where previously under the apartheid administration, families were forcibly removed under the Group Areas Act. Mr. Stokes was one such child at the time, or young man at the time, one of 10 siblings who was relocated and now lives back in Fairview in the project that I've just referred to. So too does Mr. Francois van Heerden, who's a resident in Warmerlink, also in Nelson Mandela Bay. Mr. van Heerden is visually impaired, but he is the breadwinner of the family, and he makes very positive comments about the way that for his lifestyle, the social housing project of that density in proximity to the amenities that accompanies help him and his family to be fine. And Agritura, before briefly going to the financial statements, Chairperson, there's a very large project in KwaZulu-Natal. We haven't been launching a lot of the projects, although a lot of them are ready to be launched. Aloe Ridge, which is the Westgate Grange project, which is at a very advanced stage of construction and has counted towards our first and second quarter performance in the current financial year. It's a very large project of 952 units developed by the Msunduzi Housing Association, and this will be launched by the Minister on the 23rd of November, and we certainly hope that members of the Deferred Committee will be able to attend that launch. Then to go to the External Auditor's Report, Chairperson. As I've already indicated, the report was an unqualified audit. There is one matter of emphasis, and that relates to the going concern issue. So although the financial statements are not qualified, one will recall that in 2014, in the budget speech, the Minister did make the announcement that because of the then Shah's troubles, the Shah was placed under administration. Mm-hmm. So because that announcement was made, and the Shah was placed under a form of administration, the auditors are left with no option but to state a going concern about about the Shah. Of course, were the Minister at a future date at her own discretion to make a fresh announcement and indicate that she was satisfied with the progress being made by the new council, then the auditors would in future remove the going concern in their audit report. The second one, Chairperson, which is seemingly alarming, and I will come back to it, but is not actually alarming because I've indicated progress on it, is that there was a material finding in respect to expenditure. The auditors found that the entity did not take effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure, and this relates to the expenditure contracted by the former council, but it has subsequently been regularised. My next slide will show you how that's been regularised so that you can have the confidence that you don't have to worry about that nasty audit finding going forward. The last one, which is one that management is attending to, and everything's on an audit tracking document that management and the council and the audit committee monitor. The last one is one of concern to us, and you must get better at it, and that is in regard to the performance information. There were really two parts of the auditor's finding, and it all relates to the investment program. None of the other three programs were affected by this finding. And that's really the level to which the indicator in the APP is smart and time-bound, and secondly, as to whether the evidence supporting the report is sustained by the evidence presented to the auditors. And the auditors found that there was improvement required. So the material finding on the reliability of the reported performance against the predetermined objectives of the investment program do need to be improved, and we're working very hard, and I sincerely do believe that the new APP for the new financial year that we're currently working on is a vast improvement on the previous APP. Then to give you the comfort about the irregular expenditure, Chairperson, you read the text at the bottom. Basically what the Act says is that a council of Shra must be comprised of a minimum of 7 and a maximum of 12 non-executive members. So what happened here is that although there's nothing wrong with the contracts themselves and the projects themselves, one mustn't be misunderstood on this, there's no money that's gone missing. But because the council wasn't comprised of a minimum of 7 members, the previous council had 1.6 members and another 0.5 members, and they did approve contracts, and we spent against those contracts. In the previous year, we spent 12.1 million, and in the year reporting on, we spent 117 million. So that was a total of 129 million. So that's irregular expenditure because the contracts were approved by a non-Korat council. The good news there, Chair, you'll see on the bottom line, is that this new council has now condoned all of that expenditure. Those contracts have re-gone through the TSC, they've re-gone through the investment committee, they've been presented a second time to a Korat council, and the Korat council has approved those contracts, and the auditors have expressed their satisfaction. On the financial statements, starting with the balance sheet, Chairperson, we won't go through the entire balance sheet. I'll just highlight a couple of the most important ones. Of course, the most important one is that big number next to note number 4 at the top, 789 million. That, Chairperson, cash and cash equivalents is effectively built primarily from the prior year retained surpluses that were brought forward to the reporting year, and that are linked to signed contracts, but where the actual cash flow and the expenditure of that money hasn't kept pace with the annual budget amount, which causes us quite a lot of problems and where we're trying to catch up. On the liability side, you'll see two rather large numbers, the 144.9 million, which is the record money from the impressed accounts, and the 106 million, which is the payables. The 144 million, Chairperson, the reason why both of these are liabilities is obviously because the contracts are signed. So while it sits in our balance sheet, it's somebody else's money, because should they satisfy the terms of the contract, the money gets paid. By the 30th of March of that year, the 106 million had been in the contract, but we hadn't paid it out, which is why it sits in our balance sheet as a liability. So we do have a reduced net asset. You see it's gone down by about 50 million to 539 million at the end of the reporting year. On the income statement side, Chairperson, it requires some explanation, because while it might look as it does look, and we don't, because of the retained surplus, have a cash problem, we do, however, have a budget problem. So if you look at the revenue side, we generated revenue through drawing down from the National Department of Human Settlements in the reporting financial year of 143 million. But if you look on the program costs, what we spent in RCG money was more than what we managed to draw down from the National Department. We spent 201 million. Add to that the 37 million, which was operating costs, and so you have a deficit for the reporting year of 94 million before the interest that we earned. So the total deficit by the end of the financial year was 50.7 million. It's nothing to be alarmed about, because that deficit is paid from the cash on hand, which is what I referred to in the balance sheet. What, though, is of concern is that it's not a cash problem for now, but should performance really improve as we're planning to improve it, it effectively becomes a long-term budget problem, because we would then ultimately have lost the portion of the budget that we managed to draw down. Chair, if we can take the cash flow statement, because they're all the numbers you see at the bottom, 789, ties back to the balance sheet, the retained income, and if we can also jump over the statement of changes to net assets, which links back to, you see there, the 539 million. So I'm going to jump over those and move towards the last part of the presentation. Chairperson, you asked what is the progress being made. Between the 49 accredited social housing institutions, either fully accredited or conditionally accredited, I gave you the number earlier of 5,100 and some change. Subsequent to that, there is still continued movement and continued progress. So by the end of the second quarter of the current financial year, the number of units that we have completion certificates for is 6,225. But we have 12,500 odd that are approved contracts or under construction. So the total contracted, included completed or under construction in the contract, is 18,000 contracts signed. But on the bottom of the slide, you'll see that we do have a pipeline of 19,000 units beyond the 18,000. I don't want to give the committee false hope. There's a lot of rats and mice in some of these projects. There's also good projects, and a lot of them have gaps which we still have to plug before they can go into production. But at least there are projects in the pipeline. Some of the interventions that we propose to further upscale social housing delivery. The first one, and the Minister has emphasized this and the Council has emphasized this, is that with the limited number of units that each accredited social housing institution can take on board and produce, we have to look at other avenues. And the main avenues are investigating alternative methods, primarily the private sector, as developers. Also, we are part and parcel and very much active in the catalytic projects, which is being led by our colleagues at the HDA, and we're part of that entire procurement process because a large number of the catalytic projects are located in restructuring zones and have a large amount of social housing. And lastly, the 19,000 units does include a lot of pipeline projects that are from other development agencies, private sector agents, not only social housing institutions. The second one, which I think we do need to boast about a little bit, Chairperson, is the intergovernmental arrangements to support social housing. You can now have the confidence that the provinces, the metros or the local authorities where the project is in their area, the funders and the financiers, the NHFC and agencies like the Gauteng Partnership Fund, are all part of the Technical Evaluation Committee that processes project applications at the SHRA these days. They are part of the standing agenda, they're part of the standing terms of reference, and they are attending these meetings. So we are by design structurally integrating the planning that the SHRA is doing with the planning that the provinces and the local authorities as well as the financiers are doing. We're also signing cooperation agreements. We had the PSC, Provincial Steering Committee for Gauteng, last week, and we've signed a cooperation agreement with the province of Gauteng, and other cooperation agreements are in the pipeline and very close to being signed. The last one is the viability of the financial model for social housing. This is currently top of agenda with the Council of SHRA, who are busy discussing the matter. It is being pulled apart and put back together at an all-day workshop on the 3rd of November, so that the Council of SHRA is able to make a policy advice, as it's required to do under the Act, to the National Minister of Human Settlements. And it's also on the Council, the other thing that's on the Council agenda is procuring the inner city properties to increase the amount of social housing that goes into the inner city. That makes the program more agile, but up until now we haven't been in the business of procuring properties in the inner city. But there's an item on Thursday's agenda to respect. And then the last part that I would just emphasize, Chair, because I've already said, and there's not enough time to tell you what the plans are for each and every province, but because the National Minister did make a promise in the budget speech specifically about the Northern Cape, I've already said, very worried about the Northern Cape because the target is very high compared to the project pipeline and the capacity. So there are no social housing projects in the pipeline for the Northern Cape, but there's a backlog of 53,000 units that must be addressed. There's only one accredited social housing institution, it's the Northern Cape Social Housing, the Swedish International Housing Company. It's minute, it only has 123 units. It's based in Stor Blanke. But in discussions with the province, we need to look beyond only that agency. So what I would like to say to you is that yes, the primary obstacle to unlocking production in the Northern Cape is developers are there, they can build the houses. But after they've built the houses, even at the moment, Stor Blanke as a local authority has a problem in managing their own houses. So we have to, while the houses are being built, actually create capacity from the ground up. The good news, because I'm not here to give you bad news, Chair, I'm being honest about everything, but the good news is that we have been in intense discussions with the province of the Northern Cape, and we are plotting out a way forward. And of course, there's an opportunity because you have mandated us with institutional development, institutional investment, or what we now call sector development, and we do have the budgets to build new capacity, and that targeted institutional investment intervention is something that is currently at management level, and once we have got it well defined, the terms of reference are busy being crafted, and it will be focused on towns and cities like Sol Plaatje, Kruman and Upington as the three most important ones. Then once that's well defined, it'll go to our EXCO and our council for final approval. So Chair, in summary, the SRA is moving in general in the right direction. I do feel that we do need an opportunity at some point after we've had an opportunity to brief the Minister first at some point to present to this committee the full detail, all the nuts and bolts of the performance turnaround and all the things that we are doing. The purpose of last year's annual report, those are the highlights without going into detail on each KPI. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sam, for that report. It is detailed and proofed. I can see even from the face of the whenever I try to come here and present, let me not go there. Any comments or clarities on this report from the member?
I'm not going to get into the detail of the report, but I just wanted to understand if this what is this?
Oh, okay. We'll let you know. Okay. Honorable Manakara.
Thank you, Mr. I think we must really applaud the work done by the new council and the CEO. For the improvement, of course, being assisted by the department. Credit goes to the department that they have performed in the manner that we have expected of them to assist the SRA, or to the minister as well. We expect more going forward, keep up the good work, bearing the history that we are coming from. And then we're hoping that with the new council, there will be no need for you to be babysitted by the department anymore. And we expect a more progress. But having said that, Chair, I just want to give a one clarity that says on PFMA 2015-2016, you have regressed.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether the question will be relevant to that to your presentation. I've looked at this and that multi of building or houses, but just want to know how do people get in if they want to go to the upper stairs? Are there any lift or something?
Okay. Why don't you go and look at anyway, no, they will respond, but if you've been to some of the oversight that we have attended, they are there, and there's even some wheelchair rail. So we've done oversight, we know. And how they then give people their location, they wouldn't give good people the higher stairs, they would give them on the ground. And those are people with disabilities, because we've asked that question in PE. So, but anyway, I remember in PE you missed the flight. That's why.
Yeah.
from my side, very good presentation indeed, and improving. But that one question, I know
on the issue of the performance of SRA on the accredited entities per province vis-à-vis the social housing delivery per province. If you look at the two slides, they actually tell you exactly that where there's less entities per province accredited, it talks to the performance in that particular province. And for me, CEO himself has highlighted three provinces that he's very worried about, which is Limpopo, Northwest, and North Cape. But then in the report, later on in the report, he stresses only Northern Cape and how they are assisting. But nothing much has been said about Northwest, which does not even have an accredited entity. So I just wanted to check. I know that probably it's something that they might come back up to. Because for me, those two slides speak directly to the overall performance of the system. Because if we can't improve the social housing delivery in these provinces, it then talks to the overall target of the department and the number that the minister had promised to deliver. Because remember, the minister had spoken about 1.5 million housing opportunities by the end of the term. And if this then doesn't improve, we are not going to achieve our overall target, which is 1.5 million. But I just wanted to have that sense that I hear the Northern Cape, the intervention being done, there's 53,000 that units that have been projected vis-a-vis the 123 that are there. But in the rest, you see 0, 0, particularly in the Northwest. I'm worried about that. And I'm worried about Limpopo. I just wanted to have a sense then, what is it that we are going to do to improve the situation in those three provinces?
Chairperson, the graphic that was asked about. I hope this was circulated to. If it wasn't circulated to committee, I do
right.
Have. That
right.
Was okay. So, well, it's trying to make our story a bit more vibrant. It's colourful. In fact, it was very controversial even when EXCO was trying to choose. But these are four-story walk-ups. But I'm not sure if I understood the question, because these are buildings and the residents.
Oh, it doesn't mean anything. It's not maybe a short.
Can you talk to me?
Okay. It interested me to understand exactly what is behind this problem. Because I believe for any organization, you put something and then there's a meaning to it. So
yes,
that was what's in my mind.
Yes, it's trying to depict scale. It's trying to depict lifestyle. You see there's a fellow watering his garden on his veranda, and there's another chap on his bicycle. Wow, Chair, I don't know if it's a chap or if it's a woman, but... it's lifestyle, and it's the first attempt at depicting the kind of towns and cities and experience that some would like me to have. But I suppose art is always controversial. It could be done much better. Chair, the regression that's referred to, which I share the concern of the member about, and which was the subject of so much debate between the auditors and management. And I had to remind them that there was once upon a time a chap called Isaac Newton, and he believed in the theory of cause and effect. So I couldn't understand how could it be possible with exerting so much energy that they could find that we'd regressed. It's very, very technical. Because when they measure each and every item, so for example, on governance, on leadership, on the irregular expenditure, they apply technical measures. So technically, it's their final call and they find that it's regressed. Because they have a catalogue or an index, and it's tick, 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 and we we had a long debate with them. Operationally, though, the good news is that the foundation has been created, and I'll make an example. For example, at Thursday's meeting, the very last one of the previous council's irregular minutes that hadn't, you know, that had not been approved because they weren't correct, will be in front of the new council for adoption, and then we'll. All of the investment committee minutes are already cleaned up. And so we've been slowly but surely, one by one, knocking off all the loose ends so that we can't regress. I don't have a management letter with me, so to get to the detail, maybe the member can help me by reading what is being referred to. But, you know, I know the table that the member's referring to. And the only thing is I can say that I don't believe you need to be alarmed, but it is very technical, and we didn't also agree with the auditors, but they have the final say. And then, Chairperson, any building that's above four stories obviously does have to have a lift. It's the law. In fact, the reason why so many social housing projects stop at the fourth story is because with the fifth there's the additional cost of lift. But inner city buildings are all have. And then, Chairperson, the more question on the provinces, and especially the provinces that are more rural in nature, because we'd also have to worry ultimately about a province like the Free State, and we'd also have to worry about ultimately about a province like Mpumalanga. There are a couple of key things. The first one is restructuring zones. Because, in fact, in Northwest, for example, we have quite a few really good projects, but the zones aren't approved. So that's what holds us back. I won't say the same about Limpopo and Northern Cape. There we just don't have an agile submission of projects. But if we get the restructuring zone aligning with where the good project is located, and then the third ingredient, Chairperson, is a provincial champion. Some of the provinces are doing well because they've got very strong provincial champions, provincial government officials, who are pushing. And some of the provinces are doing more poorly because they unfortunately don't have a strong driver in the province. It's, you know, most of the energy is going into informal settlements upgrade or BNG or something else. There are those supports, for example, in the Northwest, support around all of the housing around Rustenburg and Manikana. I think members may have seen that we have been supporting the province as well as the city to establish capacity, and there's been a public call for proposals, and there's been competition for who will get awarded the contract to manage the new units in Manikana. So, Chair, each province has got a different story. Limpopo is furthest behind, then after that it's Northern Cape, and then the closest that's closest to us where there's good projects is Northwest.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Council.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. With your permission, Chair, I would just like to introduce Advocate Ndlovu. He is also a member of the Council. But also, I would just like to make a comment on the issue of the restructuring zones. Though the matter has not really served in terms of in the council for detailed discussions, but I had a discussion with some officials from the department as well as the CEO, because we need to find an easier way of getting the restructuring zones approved. The TRA itself can apply directly to the minister without the process having to go through MINMAC and justify that. I don't think, in my understanding of the Act, there doesn't seem to be any problem to that. But we will try to really fast-track the issue, the question of approval by the minister of restructuring.
Thank you very much. I think it's important. I know the officials from the department would know this, because almost every province that we go in terms of oversight
this issue of the structure has been done for us. That some of them have sent their applications for years and they are still waiting. For instance, Richard Bain, which has been on our case about their application for the structure since last year. And I was promised when we were on oversight and was on that item will be serving in the new bank. And I know it never served. So I'm just saying I agree with you. Maybe we need to find a way of dealing with this issue because it's something that they have been begging us. I know that even when we were in the same case, this issue was raised. So wherever we go in terms of oversight, they raise the long process of how this issue is dealt with. But maybe that's something that we need to look at some point. Maybe the DG and the department will come back to us, or they can respond now if they want to. Just say how then will they assist us in this process, because it speaks then to the low numbers that we are seeing from provinces when there are those that are ready to help their transport. Maybe over to you, DG. Are you feeling better?
Okay, DG. Much. The officials from SHA are part of that team that is processing the structural resource. We presented it to technical amendment. It was rejected by all the officials. And we rejected it because when you do restructuring zones, and this is the part that Minister emphasized to all the agencies, you're not submitting the municipality. You're demarcating an area within a municipality. So what province is a municipality, a single date in the past, a single subject, at least a municipality is where they would want the structural zones. Because we're not building social housing everywhere. Mm-hmm. We're building social housing in well-located areas. In within the municipality, there are those structural zones. For instance, in Otsoren, we were told that Otsoren, they would want to be classified as a structural zone. So we then asked them, which part of Otsoren in the Western Cape you would want to classify or demarcate as a structural zone? Is it a CBD? Because it can be the entire municipality. So that process is almost complete. Those provinces that have not done much, they will find us somewhere. We're submitting what has been submitted. I think the Western Cape is at end. Eastern Cape is still lagging behind. The Northwest, they have submitted some areas from Rustenburg because we're building in the mining town as well, so we do need the structural results. So that exercise is almost done. It's only waiting for to be presented. I'm sure it will serve in the next week. In fact, we looked at it yesterday as management in the department, so it will be submitted. We also wanted to synchronize it with the master special plan, which HDA is driving, because we don't want to declare a structuring zone this side only to find that it's not in sync with the master special plan that HDA is finalized. But I understand we're running behind by almost 3 years. This should have been done in the last year.
Thank you very much. I think that
Minister
that's a bit comforting. But also there was an undercurrent application from SHRA on our members that they would have loved to come back and present their turnaround strategy to the committee after they have had that discussion with the minister. I've heard them. I listened very well. So we will then await, because we're not sure when that meeting with the minister will continue. So we're not going to include you to the meeting of the 8th of November, where we are bringing the other 20 back. We will first hear from the department when that interaction with the minister has concluded, and then we will then invite you back but probably when we invite you back, we would also would want to have a report also, because by then the technical leadership would have set. Let's also have a report on the restructuring results that have been approved being attached in that report, so that we can see the progress that is being made, so that if there isn't, we can then, as the portfolio committee, assist to go back to the department to find out where the bottleneck, why are these not being approved. So we will leave it for now until that meeting, and then we're hoping that when you come back, you will then be able to say to us, yes, here are the approved restructuring results. If there isn't, then we will then have to go back to the department to tell us where. I think, let me conclude on this issue on that area. Whilst we, when you come back with the turnaround program, you will also tell us what plans you have around those projects that are not performing well, and what is it then that you think will actually happen. Thank you very much for the uplifting report, at least in terms of the comments, particularly the financial performance of the SRA in this financial year. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I think on that note, we can conclude this. Not unless there is someone in the room and everyone to raise something that is serious.
Gracias.